What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
It's Wednesday, May 25th. I'm Oscar Ramirez in Los Angeles, and this is The Daily Dive. How old are you really? There's a growing interest in biological age versus your chronological age. The idea behind it is that your cells and organs age differently, and knowing your biological age can help you postpone or avoid age-related illnesses. There is currently no standard way to measure it, but scientists and startups are developing ways through blood tests or saliva tests. Betsy Morris, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal, joins us for What to Know. Next, there's a lot of frustration when kids are misbehaving or acting out. So how do you discipline when it happens, especially if you might be in a public place? Is a timeout in order or a time in? Deborah Farmer Chris, education journalist and founder of Parenthood 365, joins us for how to discipline in the heat of the moment. Finally, for all you fans of intermittent fasting, a new study concludes that it might not be all it's cracked up to be. Time-restricted eating goes like this. Eat anything you want as long as it's only between a 6 to 8 hour time period. The new study let one group of participants eat a set number of calories between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., and the other group, the same number of calories at whatever time they wanted. What they found was there was no difference. Gina Collada, medical reporter at the New York Times, joins us for what it all means. It's News Without the Noise. Let's dive in.
If you as a person, layperson, a consumer, have a way to measure or know your biological age, then you can take actions or change your behavior in a way to lower it, make yourself younger and healthier.
Joining us now is Betsy Morris, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us, Betsy.
Good to be here.
Well, let's talk about our age. We have our chronological age, obviously, you know, how many years we've been on this earth. But there's another measure of age that I guess is gaining some popularity, your biological age. So this is a little bit different. Our cells and our organs kind of age differently in our bodies. And, you know, scientists and other people are saying, you know, maybe this can help us think about life differently and try to avoid some illnesses. You know, if we know we're coming up, our cells, our biological age is aging at a different pace, you know, we can start preparing for some of these illnesses that might be down the pipeline for us. So, Betsy, tell us a little bit more about biological age and then, you know, what's going on with this, because there's a little bit of, not necessarily controversy, but some disagreements with it.
Biological age is really the, as you said, the age of your biology. It's the age of your body. And it's different scientists measure it in different ways. That's part of what makes it a little bit controversial. But the notion or the concept is that your health really is probably linked more closely to the age of your heart, how your heart is aging or how your brain is aging. And so the significance is that if you as a person, layperson, a consumer, have a way to measure or know your biological age, then you can take actions or change your behavior in a way to lower it, make yourself younger and healthier.
Now, the question that I have now is how do you calculate something like this? And this is where some of the disagreements fall into place. There's a couple of startups that are trying to do this through blood markers. Other are trying to do kind of DNA swabs from the inside of your cheek. But how do we calculate what your biological age could be?
Again, there's no standard. You know, there's no like FDA standard of how to measure this. So you have a lot of really good scientists who've been working on it. They use different means, different techniques to, you know, to measure it. And as you said, I mean, some look for changes on the DNA in your blood. And the reason for that is that, you know, different things you do can affect your genes. It can affect your gene expression. So it really can make a difference in the rest of your body. Others, there's one that I know of that looks at saliva. Another one looks at sugar molecules called glycans. And there's also a tracker that will take in all the information from all of the different devices that you have measuring your heart rate, your glucose, whatever, take in all that information. And in that particular case, it comes up with your biological age based on comparing you and a lot of the things about your body with patterns they've found in the world's big biobanks, the data they've found. So anyway, yeah, there are many ways. It's not, there are many legitimate ways. The problem is there's no agreement really.
But the other part of this, right, is, you know, be wary of kind of that snake oil part of it, right? There's a lot of people on the other side of things that say, you know, this isn't really going to help you avert some type of illness or whatever. You know, just knowing biologically you're a little bit younger or older isn't going to do much. You know, if you, even if you do that perfect optimization of the sleep, diet, and all that stuff, it might not change that much.
You know, the bottom line in this, as in, if you're not even thinking about biological age, the bottom line is you've got to make really dramatic behavior changes in order to really affect your longevity or your ability to kind of stave off age-related disease, right? Like heart disease or dementia. One scientist I interviewed said, like, if you eat a donut, it's not going to automatically make you, you know, make your biological age older. It doesn't work that way. It really takes a lot of incremental change over time.
Betsy Morris, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
It goes from saying, pick up your Legos, to when the Legos on the floor, I step on them and it hurts. So it's in the language, you're correcting, but you're also providing the why. And those little extra steps providing the why, that's the teaching of discipline.
Joining us now is Deborah Farmer Chris, education journalist and founder of Parenthood 365. Thanks for joining us, Deborah.
Thanks for having me.
Well, wanted to talk a little bit about parenting and how to discipline in the heat of the moment. So right when your kid is acting up, throwing a tantrum, fighting with their siblings, whatever it may be, you know, a lot of times there's a huge frustration that sets in a parent, and it's difficult to know kind of what the appropriate measure is, how to react in that moment, you know, especially if you're out in public, right? I always remember acting up and my mom kind of putting the fear of God in me, like, you better calm down now. We're going to do this later. You know, that's kind of that's kind of how I remember things, right? And even when you see the kids acting up too, as just a bystander, you're like, oh man, what's going to happen? You know? So right. Deborah, you wrote a little bit about this, timeouts, time-ins, a bunch of different ways to react to these things. So what are we looking at?
Well, I think the first thing you have to remember is that, you know, the root of discipline is actually to teach, is from Latin. But that teaching is not going to happen when your child is highly emotionally activated. And the things that tend to get us most riled up as parents are those moments when our kids are pushing those buttons, they're tantruming in Target, they're losing control on the subway, whatever it is, and we feel our own temperature rising. And so, you know, we want at that moment to, you know, get them to stop. Not just that, we want to make sure they don't do it again. So we might instinctively go to probably wherever our parents went. But our kids are in fight or flight at that mode. I think that's really important to remember. And they're not, most of the time, they're not doing this on purpose. There is just this gap for whatever reason in that moment. Maybe they're overtired. Maybe they're set off for whatever reason. And if we do, out of anger, that thing of go to your room or that swat on the back, that is going to raise their cortisol level even higher. And it's going to kind of create what I kind of call like the a little bit of that kind of parenting death spiral, right? Where they're getting more agitated than we are. So I think one of the first things to remember is that we, as hard as it sounds, have to be kind of the calm in the storm. And that all that really good teaching can happen But in the heat of the moment, first you got to make sure they're safe, so that if they're trying to dart into traffic, you've got to physically stop them. Or if they're hurting their sister, you've got to remove them. But from then, you have to be thinking about what's going to help calm the central nervous system. What's going to help calm the fight or flight response to settle their glitter. And so, you know, for a long time, like timeout was a thing. It seemed so much gentler than saying, you know, just for, than spanking, which most of us grew up with. And I think for some kids, as experts I spoke with said, that can work, but a lot of it depends on your child and the context and their temperament. If they can regulate on their own, then sending them away for a moment to calm down and think about it and return can work. But if your child is highly distressed when you kind of send them away, they're just going to work themselves into more of that. And so one of the alternatives is what they call the time in, which is you stay with them, helping them self-regulate, working through strategies, breathing, whatever it is, to help them calm down enough. So then you can talk about the kind of why it is that what they did is not safe for them or for the people or not appropriate.
You know, you write in the article too, you know, a lot of times we assume that our kids should know better or that they have, you know, more social skills than they currently do, right? You're thinking in your head and you're frustrated, right? A lot of this kind of stems from some of that frustration. You're like, oh my God, like, why aren't you behaving? You should know better for all of this. And, you know, you have to explain that to them. You know, you have to go back and reset with them.
The phrase I use, you have to make the implicit explicit. You have to take the things you think they know and spell it out. And well, that's always been true. It's even more true now, I think, post-pandemic, because I remember when I took my kids out to a restaurant for the first time in 2 years. And I was like appalled that they weren't saying, you know, thank you when their food was brought, right? Like, and then I realized that they actually didn't know they were supposed to do that. They didn't know. I was thinking they're being rude. And this was not something I hadn't had the chance to teach them. That was one of those little moments. But there's a form of discipline called inductive discipline or induction, which research shows is the most effective in helping kids develop things like future kindness and generosity. And it's really simply this. It's just helping them connect the dots between their actions and other people's feelings, between what they do and, you know, it's natural consequences. So it goes from saying, pick up your Legos, to when the Legos on the floor, I step on them and it hurts. So it's in the language, you're correcting, but you're also providing the why. And those little extra steps providing the why, that's the teaching of discipline. So, you know, if you have a child who looks like they're being rude, maybe they're not activated, they just look like, hey, you know, they're being inconsiderate. First thing to do is to try to explain what to do and why and see where it goes from there.
You know, at home, obviously you can do the time out and the time in and spend the time to do that. But, you know, when you're out places, I mean, things need to happen quickly to get resolved. So what's something that parents can do in those settings?
The first thing is to make sure they're safe, right? So that's baseline. You have to, sometimes if they're little, that means physically removing them from a situation. It may mean you're not finishing your Target trip. You're going back to the car till they're calmed down and trying it again, but getting that moment of removing first. But then one of the things that's really important to remember, and in Mark Brackett, who I spoke to, who's the director of Emotional Intelligence Center at Yale University, said, behavior is actually not enough information. We think that, oh, my child's being doing this, they must be angry, they must be disrespectful, they must be blank. And he says, you know, you have a very hard time based on just seeing their behavior about what's really going on psychologically. And what you really want to start doing when you can kind of take a deep breath yourself, that's number one, like notice you're being activated, take the deep breath, because kids respond to us. But then to become an emotion scientist and say, oh, you know, guess what? I actually have not said, my kid hasn't had a snack in like 6 hours, you know, or they might be overstimulated. They were up too late last night. It may be something simply physiological that a snack more than a consequence is going to help solve. And so when you can deactivate yourself enough to get curious, and part of that is to, you know, say other people's, you know, reactions be damned, right? Who are in the store. It's very easy to feel judged as a parent. Yeah, but if you can say, you know, this is about my kid. And right now, what is their need?
Deborah Farmer-Chris, education journalist and founder of Parenthood 365. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
The main thing they were asking is, what about weight loss? But then they asked about everything else, like what happened to your cholesterol levels, your blood pressure, your insulin sensitivity. No difference between the two groups.
Joining us now is Gina Colada, medical reporter at the New York Times. Thanks for joining us, Gina.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's an interesting study that we just found out about that has to do with what a lot of people have been finding very successful in the weight loss realm, the intermittent fasting, you know, where you only kind of eat through a certain period of time throughout the day. And I guess you're allowed to eat anything you want as long as it's confined to that time. Well, there was a one-year study done now, a very rigorous study, that basically says that's not so true. So, Gina, help us walk through some of this. What are we seeing with it?
Well, you're right that a lot of people who do intermittent fasting, the rule is whatever you want during like 6 or 8 hour period of time. And this one tried to separate the effects of the time, like it doesn't matter whether you're eating in the daylight hours, which is one of the ideas, or if you hold the calories constant. In other words, if you have two groups, one can only eat, in this case, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., which sounds kind of difficult. And the other group could eat whenever they wanted, but both groups had the same number of calories. So that was because the hypothesis here is that you have these various enzymes that are active during day, and it's part of your circadian rhythm. And they're going to burn up calories faster than if you eat all the time, same number of calories all the time. So this study said, well, let's put that to the test. So the study went on for about a year. Involved men and women, and the men ate 1,500 to 1,800 calories a day. The women ate 1,200 to 1,500. And these scientists were pretty careful about documenting things. They asked the participants to photograph everything they ate and to keep a food diary. I mean, it's amazing how motivated people must be. And everybody lost, I mean, on average, both groups lost 15 to 18 pounds over the year. But there was no difference in the two groups in terms of how much weight they lost. And then the secondary outcomes, as they called them, like the main thing they were asking is, what about weight loss? But then they asked about everything else, like what happened to your cholesterol levels, your blood pressure, your insulin sensitivity. No difference between the two groups.
The hypothesis still kind of stands, at least for people that maybe have trouble calorie counting. They say that, you know, maybe that intermittent fasting at least helps with that.
That's right. And as I talked to one guy, Chris Gardner at Stanford, who had himself a diet study that confounded all of his assumptions about diet studies. And he said, what's interesting is if you look at the literature, every diet works for someone. So like on average, this didn't work for the people and they didn't burn more calories, people in the study. But there's always some people who do really well on a particular diet for whatever reason. And he said that might be the basis of a lot of these anecdotes. People say, I did that diet and I lost so much weight. Well, you may be like the lucky person, one of the lucky people for whom that diet actually does make a difference. So you kind of don't want to throw everything out because dieting is so hard for people. And you don't want to say there's only one way that will ever work and you have to do it. Because for you, maybe time-restricted eating is the key.
Definitely.
For somebody else, it might be just calorie counting. I mean, I don't think the researchers were dogmatic about this. I certainly, as a medical reporter who's been reporting on these diets and obesity forever, don't want to say that either.
If you're doing the restrictions, I mean, you're going to notice some changes. But borne out over time, you know, that time zone, right, when you're just eating in that 6 to 8 hour period, that doesn't necessarily seem to provide you more benefit.
One of the good things about this study and the previous one that lasted 12 weeks is they were very large. A lot of the studies were not very large, didn't last very long, and didn't have many, they just didn't have enough participants, didn't have enough, really didn't have enough power to answer the question. So the other study was done by a guy who really believed in time-restricted eating. He'd been doing it for 7 years. He didn't eat a thing until noon. He would eat between noon and 8 p.m. So then he did this study to see, well, does it matter? And his, it was different because they didn't hold the calories constant. They said, what you have to do is, if you're in the time-restricted eating group, you can eat whatever you want between 12 and 8 o'clock at night. And the other group was supposed to eat 3 structured meals a day, and if they were really starving between meals, they could have snacks. It didn't matter when they ate them. So he was not holding calories constant. He was asking the question, is it the time of day? Does it matter at all?
Yeah.
Found no difference. And he was so shocked, he couldn't believe it. He asked the statistician 4 different times, please look at the data again. Take another look and analyze them. Finally, the statistician said, you know, I could keep doing this forever, and it's not going to change. So this researcher, Ethan Weiss, actually, at that point, he said he himself was going to give up on time-restricted eating. He thought he'd gain weight. He didn't. He just eats breakfast now.
And to finish it off there, I love the way you ended your article, you know, in your conversation with him. He said he started eating breakfast now because it obviously he can eat whenever he wants. And his family says he's a lot nicer for having that first meal of the day. So, yeah.
He was funny. I love talking to him. He was hilarious. But it's interesting that, you know, the true scientist, if they do a study that confounds all their assumptions, they say, I didn't like to hear this result, see this result, but, you know, I have to just say I was wrong. And I respected him for being able to do that, because a lot of people just keep clinging to their hypothesis. And they say, I'll test it another way. I'll test it another way.
Right.
Hoping that someday it'll turn out to be what they want.
You just don't want,
to let go
at that point right there. Yeah. Gina Colata, medical reporter at the New York Times. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
That's it for today. Join us on social media at Daily Dive Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. Leave us a comment, give us a rating, and tell us the stories that you're interested in. Follow us on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you get your podcast. This episode of The Daily Dive is produced by Victor Wright and engineered by Tony Sorrentino. I'm Oscar Ramirez, and this was your Daily Dive.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro? Amazing taste. Pro? Pairs well with anything. Pro? Probiotic? That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.